Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic and guide to many things. He joins us weekly. The films Support the Girls, Nico, 1988, and Operation Finale. There you go. Done my part. Over to you, CB.
Well, thank you so much. Three very, very different kinds of films this week, although the first two are very much independent productions, things made really outside the Hollywood system, and very, very worthwhile, so I really want to call attention to them. And then the third film, Operation Finale, is more of a regular type commercial film. Support the Girls is the latest movie by Andrew Bujalski, who is a young filmmaker. He's made several movies, and his work is very amiable. I like it a lot. And Support the Girls, it's not a major film, but it's a lovely, basically, portrait of an interesting character and an interesting sort of milieu. So the main character is a woman named Lisa, played wonderful performance that's deservedly getting a lot of praise by Regina Hall. And she is the manager of what you might call a restaurant. It's more of sort of a hangout of a, well, the name of it is Double Whammies. And since it is staffed by young female weight persons, as we say nowadays, who wear very skimpy costumes, you can sort of see where this punning name of the outfit, Double Whammies, comes from. It's sort of like Hooters is basically what it is. It's a little bit more dignified than Hooters. You're not allowed to touch the young people who wait on you at table. But people sit around there and they drink their Double Whammies and they eat their little food, and Lisa is the manager. And the first part of the movie, she's training a new recruit, a new employee, and then various things go on from there. She's also dealing with conflicts with the boss of the place, the owner of the place. And it's a little movie. It's a whimsical sort of a movie. The first half is more sort of a continually comedic than the second half, which gets a little bit more serious. The first half deals very much with a car wash, which is being held as a sort of a fundraiser, which the owner does not approve of and doesn't want anything to do with, does not approve of. And Haley Lou Richardson, who is getting a lot of buzz nowadays, is very, very good as another one of the characters. It's very much almost entirely a female cast. There's a male here and there in the story for sure. So it's a small movie, but Bujalski does idiosyncratic work, and I really always like to support him. He's a good, solid, independent filmmaker. His last film I liked even more, a movie called Computer Chess. Not the most catchy title in the world, but a good movie. So anyway, Support the Girls is a movie I, in fact, support. Moving on to Nico, 1988. This is a very, very interesting movie that I was really quite absorbed in. It was written and directed by Susanna Nicchiarelli, and it stars the Danish actress Trina Dyrholm Trina Dyrholm as Nico, the sort of once upon a time iconic singer who made her name with the Velvet Underground, one of the very greatest rock groups of its day, for my mind, of course, known for having people like Lou Reed and John Cale among its personnel, the drummer Maureen Tucker, Mo Tucker, fabulous sort of proto-punk band down in its day, produced by Andy Warhol when it first came along, and involved with Andy Warhol's art. Andy Warhol did, you know, a cover design here and there and that sort of thing. And Nico was the singer. And the whole point of the Velvet Underground was to be sort of anti everything that conventional, more openly commercial rock and roll stood for, while itself being very musically adventurous. It's a band that I still like to touch bases with their work every now and again. A fabulous band. And again, Nico was the vocalist when she was with the band, and then she went out on her own as a solo performer. Interesting thing about Nico, whose real name, by the way, was Krista Pofkin. She was German and then came to America. Interesting thing about her is that I think she was quite a terrible singer. Her intonation was bad. She never sounded like she was quite on pitch, but she had a mystique, she had a glamour, and even though her singing is far and not anywhere near the top of the things I really liked about the Velvet Underground, she was a unique presence. Well, she kept on in her solo career long after the Velvet Underground phase of her career had faded away, and as the title suggests, Nico 1988 does not touch on her in her glamour years of the 60s or maybe the early 70s. But it really deals with the last part of her life. And in fact, as we discover at the end of the movie, if we didn't already know it, she died in 1988. Now, the movie, Nico 1988, actually begins in 1986. And it covers, you know, about 2 years near the end of her career. Now, by this time, all the glamour has pretty much faded away from her life and her career. She is no longer a hugely popular figure of contemporary rock and roll. She is, in fact, a very faded star, but she still has a following. And at the beginning of the movie, we find her in Manchester, in England, where she is going to be based for a while, and she's moving in there, and she's getting accustomed to the place and so forth. And she really wants to keep her career going. She wants to keep her life going on an even keel, but she's got some real, real serious problems. One of the problems is that she is still, and this has been a very long-term thing, addicted to heroin, and she can't really afford the stuff anymore, if anybody ever can afford that stuff. So that's one thing that she is dealing with. She'd like to quit the habit, but she isn't really making any kind of a serious attempt. Mainly, she's just trying to keep going, keep getting the stuff, and keep on functioning from day to day. Another big challenge that is in her life is her son. Her son, who is also a heroin addict, and the story goes that she basically brought him into heroin when he was quite young. So it's a horrifying sort of family situation. But she loves him very much, and she wants to have him be a part of her life, but this is not clear whether this is ever really going to happen or not in a meaningful way. Eventually, he does join her and her backup band on their tour. And there's various other characters, particularly her backup band, who are kind of floating around the edges of the movie and sometimes coming into center stage of the movie. So the film Nico 1988 deals with mainly with this sort of tour that she goes on near the end of her life, and she doesn't know it's the end of her life, and she's staying in crummy places, and she's dealing with people who regard her. The people who book her seem to regard her as some sort of a star, but they never seem to be quite clear what sort of a star. And it's pretty obvious to everybody that she's an extremely faded star, and she just wants to keep plugging along, and there's misunderstandings right and left, but she does keep plugging along, and that is basically what the movie is showing us. So it's a downbeat movie. By the way, it's an Italian-Belgian production, so it's coming to us from Europe, and a good deal of it takes place in Europe. Andy Warhol shows up every once in a while for a brief flash of archive footage, but he's not really a character in the film because this deals with the very, very post-Warhol phase of her career. It's a downbeat film, but in its way, it's a sort of an optimistic film because it shows somebody who just refuses to quit and just keeps on going. Now, the main thing about this movie, and this is what critics have been saying about it, and they're completely correct, is that this is really Trina Dearholm's movie. She carries it. She's in just about every moment of it, and it's a marvelous performance. It's an utterly unglamorous performance, and yet you can see the faded star. You can see the star behind the fading, I'll put it that way. She keeps plugging along, as I keep plugging along and saying, and Dearholm makes this just so palpable. Nico, anybody who remembers her from her big star years, she was this icy blonde beauty. Well, she is no longer blonde, no longer keeping up any of that stuff. Her face and her body have worn down over the years, and yet we can somehow see this faded glamour always poking through. Very, very, it's a brilliant performance. If there were any sense at all to the Academy Awards, she would be nominated and would win the award for probably Best Actress of 2018. Of course, this being a very little independent European import, we will not see any of that sort of thing. The movie, I'm sure, will never be mentioned when the Academy Awards come along, or any of the other big races, but it's a phenomenal performance in a very, very, it's kind of a haunting film in all the best ways. And I really think anybody with any interest in either the rock and roll or the popular culture of the 60s, 70s, or 80s will have a very, very good time. Well, a very meaningful time watching this movie, and especially Trina Dearholm's performance, which is really one of the wonders of the year, I think. And our final film, Operation Finale, which is a very, very different kind of a movie. It's a sort of a big deal movie, and it has a pretty big deal cast. Oscar Isaac stars a Nazi hunter and an Israeli Nazi hunter, and Ben Kingsley plays none other than Adolf Eichmann. And this is a movie directed by Chris Weitz, written by Matthew Orton, about the attempt, the very successful attempt, as everybody knows, I think, to find Adolf Eichmann, which happens in the very beginning of the movie, down in South America, to get him into custody, to basically kidnap him, and then to smuggle him out of the country and bring him back to Israel. And then, of course, at the end of the movie, he is in Israel, and he goes on trial, and we find out at the very end what probably most people seeing this movie know or should know. Anyway, he was eventually hanged in Israel for his after his trial for his crimes as one of the great organizers, perhaps the great organizer of the Holocaust. So again, we have Ben Kingsley. What a career the guy has had. He first became a huge star for playing Gandhi, and now he's Eichmann. Same career. What a switch. I have to say that Ben Kingsley is a very, very fine actor. I was not persuaded by him as Eichmann. He didn't look much like Eichmann, except a little bit at the very, very end when he's sitting in his famous glass booth undergoing his trial in Israel. I was not persuaded by him as Eichmann. I was more persuaded by Oscar Isaac as the real-life Peter Malkin, who kind of orchestrated the successful attempt to get a hold of Eichmann, kidnap him, and get him back to Israel for his trial. The movie is basically an extremely conventional suspense movie. We have the attempt to kidnap Eichmann. This happens fairly early in the movie, and they have everything set up with an El Al plane, which is going to fly him back to Israel, and then something goes horribly wrong. And again, this is in the beginning of the movie, so it isn't really a spoiler. The flight out of the country and back to Israel is delayed by a whopping 10 days. They have Eichmann in a safe house where they expect to be holding him for maybe a few hours or maybe a day or two, and it turns out they've got to hold him there for about a week and a half, something they did not plan on. Also, then, it turns out that in order to get him on this flight, because the whole thing has to be orchestrated with the Israeli airline El Al, they have to have a statement from him that he is leaving voluntarily and going to Israel voluntarily, and obviously he does not want to sign this statement, so the Oscar Isaac character, Peter Malkin, has to put all kinds of pressure on him and try to get him to do this. In a way, it reminded me a little bit about the saga of Patricia Hearst. You have this person who is being held captive and who the captors want to persuade this person to sort of become a part of their operation. And in a way, in a strange, bizarre sort of a way, Eichmann, without ever admitting to his wrongdoing as an orchestrator, as in some ways the orchestrator of the Holocaust, does become a part of the operation, because ultimately he realizes that in certain ways it would serve his purpose as well to sign this declaration that he is going back to Israel for his trial voluntarily. But again, it's a very conventional suspense movie. My suspicions dawned in the very, very beginning when a Nazi hunter knocks on the door of a suspected Nazi to grab him, and the last thing before getting out of the car and going up to the door, he straightens out his false mustache and makes sure that it's stuck on. This is just sort of the kind of cliche that you always run across in sort of not very good suspense movies, and the whole movie kind of proceeds on that level. As good as the acting is, Ben Kingsley is terrific, even though he doesn't really look much like Eichmann, in my opinion. Oscar Isaac is excellent. The rest of the cast is just fine. I found the whole thing kind of contrived. Things are set up, you know, oh, the car's wheels get stuck in the mud just when it's time for it to tear down the road. Little things like this that are kind of cliches of the genre. Now, again, I always like to quote my friend Stuart Klawans, the wonderful film critic of The Nation magazine, who, when somebody once said, do we really need another Holocaust movie? He said, well, what would be an appropriate number of Holocaust movies? Let's say 6 million. And this is another Holocaust movie. We can never have too many of them. There are never too many things for us to learn. I wasn't familiar specifically with the story of Peter Malkin and his role in bringing Eichmann back to justice. But this is not one of the very good Holocaust movies. If you like suspense pictures, if you like Oscar Isaac or Ben Kingsley, you'll have an entertaining time watching it. But it didn't really teach me much that was new. And I can't say that it sheds any kind of meaningful light on the most horrific crime of the 20th century, that being the so-called final solution. So that is my somewhat finalized story this week, Jill.
Thank you, and that's final. David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Support the Girls, Nico, 1988, and Operation Finale.